So David's contemporary answer is based in rural Aberdeenshire, as probably not here. So he migrated here to the North East in 1994 to go to Grey School of Art. And it was here that David's interest in taxidermy and human-animal relations first emerged, largely as a means to understand his own position amidst the Aberdeenshire wilderness. His work's been exhibited both nationally and internationally. It was included in ZenoMap, Scotland's first ever presentation of the Venice Biennale in 2003. David returned to Grays, is returned to Grays now as a part-time lecturer and returned to 2004, sorry. And he currently teaches on the contemporary art practice undergraduate degree. His exhibition Stranger chapter is on RGU at the moment, so if anyone's more curious to see more of this, there is much more on there, and that's on until the 11th of January. So, thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Caroline, and thank you, Petra. And thank you, Lana, for being here today. This is a lovely day already, you know, so long may it continue. I'm going to try and keep to my time. And I'm here to tell you about a piece of work, really. A piece of work in progress. And it very much is work in progress. It's happening right now, as we speak. And I might imagine that this is even actually becomes part of the work as well. And I did write a little bit of text, you know, that I'm going to try to show some of the sort of concerns and sort of challenges that sort of come into my sort of way of thinking when working for dead animals that come into my care, because that's kind of what sort of happens. Right, so we're going to speak about scolopacks, okay? The woodcock, okay, the Eurasian woodcock, okay? Scolopacks rusticola. And really, you know, this lecture is really, like I say, it's a work in progress. There's not a conclusion as such, it kind of is going on, okay? And really, the lecture is going to try and chart the development of this idea since it began. So the scolopacks, she's a bird in hand, bird in my hand. Okay, so it starts off, right, the project, or the idea kind of started off on the 6th of November, okay? The morning after Bonfire Night, okay? In fact, the project had probably started on Bonfire Night, but I wasn't actually made aware of it until the morning of the 6th, okay? Fireworks night. So I came into work and I was covering, I wasn't supposed to be there even, I was covering for Andy Cranston, okay? So I happened to be there, it was a Thursday morning, and strangely enough, one of my other colleagues, Judy Spark, some of you will know her, she came in and she had, what happened to her? It was on her way to work in the morning, she had come across this dead bird on an Aberdeen street. In fact, it wasn't on the street, somebody had picked it up and put it on top of a wheelie bin, this most beautiful dead bird. And she was so sort of drawn by it that she had to pick it up. So she picked it up and she brought it to work to come looking for me, and I happened to be at work that day, so it was quite an odd sort of thing, okay? And she was like, come and see this bird, you know, I know you do taxidermy, and I want you to sort of have it, take care of it. So I looked at it, it's scolopacks, you know, woodcock, a lovely bird, you know? 2 hours later, okay, there was a phone call, and I didn't take the phone call, Cameron Ross took the phone call, from my office. And somebody else her name is Sarah, from Greyfriars House, so she works as a council worker at Greyfriars House, she'd found a lovely dead bird on her way to work that morning, and was so taken by it, she had to pick it up and bring it to work. And what to do with it, what she did is she went online, and she typed in University Taxidermy Aberdeen, and what came up was my exhibition at Grays, you know, RGU Stranger Tractor, looking into taxidermy and all that. It didn't come up with Aberdeen University, the zoology building, sorry Neil, it came into my hands, okay? So, you know, this was a very sort of, you know, this sort of synchronicity of events was very sort of odd, okay? So I went down to Greyfriars House to go and get the bird, opened up the black bin line the bird was in, and oh my gosh, another woodcock. Two woodcock. This is very, very sort of strange thing that sort of happens, you know? And, you know, when coincidences happen, you know, I take sort of strict attention, you know? You've got to pay strict attention when these things happen because things are at play. So these birds, they ended up in my care. And there's a certain responsibility about that. And I don't know woodcocks that well, you know, and as taxidermists are encouraged to know their subject and you know, bird watching and having a knowledge of their natural history and such like, you know. And I wasn't that familiar with the woodcock. I'll come more to that later on. And so this involves this sort of getting to know period, really. So almost trying to sort of ascertain the sort of proper care or sort of proper treatment, the sort of diagnosis that the bird sort of that the bird requires. You know, and then this although at the same time, you know, it's also sort of like, well, what are these birds trying to tell me? You know, these two birds have come into my life, what are they here to say to me? You know, what voice can I give for them? Or you know, what is this? You know? So in the meantime, I sort of froze the two birds, okay? And I started to do a little bit of research, you know, looking into woodcock, okay? And you can go in all sorts of places, and I'm going to chart some of this, okay? It's a very unusual bird, woodcock, you know, it's a lovely bird. So I'll go to a little bit of ornithology and a bit of conservation first. Some of the most important things about the woodcock and what the woodcock can teach us is that his eyes, okay? His eyes are actually quite high set on his head, and it allows the bird to see 360 degree vision, okay? So it can see all around, it's got sort of circular sort of vision, okay? And that's sort of quite distinct thing, quite an unusual thing, you know, especially when we, you know, with our sort of vision. And his beak is, sort of long beak. It's actually very sort of sensitive sort of probe actually, really. And what it does, it kind of eats worms from beneath the ground. It's a woodland bird, really. You know, although it is a marshland bird that actually chooses to live in the woods. And it gets worms and things from beneath the ground. But the upper half of its beak, you know, the upper half is actually quite flexible. You can actually push it ever so slightly, and there's a curve that forms here. So the beak is actually really, really sort of sensitive. And I did try that with my dead scolopax, you know, and it's like, yeah, its beak is actually very, very soft. And, well, it's very soft, slightly flexible. And it's camouflage. Okay, scolopax has got one of the best camouflages in the bird world, okay, which kind of, it's a sort of form of defence, I suppose. Scolopax is also sort of a migrating bird as well. We do have resident ones that sort of live here, but they do migrate from sort of Scandinavia, from Eastern sort of Europe, and in the winter months when it starts to get a bit colder, they start to sort of migrate here. Now this is sort of quite contested, and in my research, initially I sort of imagined this sort of like, you know, migration from point A to point B. But it's really not like that with scolopax at all. It does a sort of circular sort of flight. And it's really sort of like prone to sort of weather conditions and things, you know? So they tend to be lone migrators as well. They don't fly in flocks or anything like that. And just sort of given some weather conditions, some of them sort of end up in Shetland, some come here, some end up down in Ireland, and some go down towards Brittany, and then they sort of start to move their way back up through Norfolk and back up that sort of way. So there's this sort of like circular flight path, and I should also say it's anti-clockwise, the flight path, okay? And in one of the books that I was reading, or, you know, the flight path is anti-clockwise, or as the Scots would say, widdershins, okay? Right, it's quite an important thing, okay, the widdershins things. Widdershins basically means, you know, anti-clockwise or backwards, okay? And the other thing about the scolopax is that it's largely nocturnal as well. So owl watchers tend to know quite a lot about scolopax because, you know, they sort of come up just as the sun sort of setting down. They thought it's such an elusive bird, you know, because it's such good camouflage, and because it migrates, that they used to think that it migrated to the moon. When it went away, they used to think it went to the moon because it's nocturnal and stuff. And the final thing I should say as well, it's got very good sort of parental instinct as well. It can carry its young in between its legs. So it, you know, if there's ever danger, the scolopax will take its young in between its legs and fly off with the young. But that's so very, very rarely seen. Okay, and again, that sort of conservation sort of thing is the woodcock watch. Okay, because you know, and at this time, I'm sort of thinking, well, what am I going to do with my two woodcock? What do I do with them? You know. And there's this thing called the woodcock watch, and they put sort of GPS or tracking systems on a woodcock, and they sort of monitor the sort of flight. And it's really quite fun, really. You can adopt a bird, you can sponsor a bird, you know, for about £35. You can sort of, I suppose, hire a woodcock. You can adopt a woodcock, and you get to name it. And it features on the website, and you can sort of GPS sort of follow its track around the world, you know. And I started to think, okay, right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to rent two woodcock, and I'm going to call it Judy and Sarah. Okay, so you know, it was Judy and Sarah who gave me my two dead woodcock. Then we're going to have these two living woodcock, Judy and Sarah, and you know, do this sort of thing. So finally, okay, and there's this also thing about roading that they do. Now this is quite exclusive to the woodcock. It's this sort of evening flight path that it does. So what it does, it does this sort of like spiraling sort of thing on the way, and then it five or six times round and round and round and sort of gradually sort of comes back down. And when it comes down to the ground, what it tends to do is it tends to follow its mate around the tree trunk. Okay? So it's again, it's just a sort of circular thing. And so when it's flying, it's doing this sort of circular flight thing. When it's on the ground, it's traveling around the tree, you know, following its mate. And so these are really sort of quite important things for me. And already I'm starting to get this notion of the circle, of the sort of circularity of things. You know, the woodcock's trying to tell me something, like circles are important or something like that, okay? And it's 360 degree vision, it's migration patterns, the roading thing, and the things to do with the moon, that sort of stuff, okay? So what I do is, I decide to email the RSPB, okay? And I get this, you know, on Thursday this week, you know, it's just after one Friday night, my colleague, I came to work, beautiful dead bird. She found an African street. She brought to me the bird of woodcock. Later that day, received a phone call. Yeah, another woodcock. They're arriving here. I do hope, that was such a lovely bird, I do hope the population numbers are high. You know? And I get an email back from Jailbird. Okay? Jailbird ABZ. And there are good numbers of woodcock coming to our shores right now, and have been for the last few weeks. And they're coming from Scandinavia. And they're sort of settling up at Girdle Ness, just Aberdeen, you know. So I'm sort of thinking, right, okay, do I, you know, is it this thing about bonfire night? Perhaps I need to take these two dead birds up to Girdle Ness or something, you know. Perhaps I need to go up to Girdle Ness and have these two dead birds with me or something. But I didn't do that. So what I did was I took my two birds to the vet and I had an x-ray. And I went to explain to them the story that I've just already told you. And they said, oh yes, of course. And the RSPB do this all the time, you know? Because I feel a little bit sort of, you know, can we go into the side room and I can tell you this thing? You know, you're dealing with dead birds, you're dealing with dead animals, you know? And the local vet, you know, dealing with wild animals, you know? So there's a sensitivity around that. But it was completely fine, you know? They were sort of quite happily, we'll do the x-rays of the woodcock for you. And what funny thing is, yeah, what we got is that this one has a broken clavicle. You can just sort of see here. Right? And you can't see it here. I know this, and I can tell you in a minute. This one actually had a broken, you know, a fractured skull, really. And this one must have flown into something. This one maybe is more of a sort of impact blow, and you know, as if it's hit, landed somewhere, as opposed to flying into something. You can sort of see the sort of clavicle here, the broken clavicle here on this one. So it's likely that this one didn't fly into something, and I wondered whether it wasn't that sort of frightened by fireworks and kind of sort of, you know, sort of landed somewhere. Something like that. So I've been emailing, and we've got these emails from Judy, okay, because Judy found one of the birds, and she has this sort of vested interest in the bird. And she's a vegetarian, full of contradictions, is Judy, okay, and she struggles with the idea of taxidermy, okay, and I kind of, you know, had this sort of like ongoing sort of emails with Judy and myself. And I was trying to explain sort of the taxidermist, me as a taxidermist, almost as a sort of like funeral director or something, you know? The sort of funerary sort of aspects of taxidermy and the care that goes into sort of dealing and sort of processing the dead animals in your care, you see? And I was trying to say, you know, it's a bit like a, you know, almost like this person who almost sort of guides the spirit from one point to the next or something like this, you know? This sort of temporary agent. You know, because taxidermists, they come in at a particular point in an animal's life, death, whatever, and it's a very temporary, just passing sort of moment, and then they come out again and the bird's stuff, whatever. So I'm quite interested in that point. And I was imagining them as this sort of temporary sort of agent in this sort of passing of, the passing of time or something, you know? And the word passenger came to my mind, okay? Anyone know the word passenger? Passenger? I didn't even know if it was a word or not, okay? It just sort of felt right. So I looked it up, okay? And I've got this, okay? So passenger is a word. In English, it's a falconry term. It's a bird in its first year, okay? Sounds nice. And a bit more, it's really a French term. If you sort of come in here, maybe a little English, okay? Okay, passenger, traveller. Okay, that's lovely. Really archaic sort of term, traveller. And so further down, whose presence in a location is only temporary, passing, of a short duration, temporary, transitory, fleeting or flighty, informal, mostly busy. And I'm sort of imagining my two dead woodcock on an Aberdeen street, and I'm thinking, oh gosh, this really sort of feels really sort of right, you know? Now, at this point, something really wrong sort of actually happened, and I'll explain what happened. Because of my x-rays, I had to defrost my two woodcock. You know, they had to be defrosted to go to the x-ray. And it kind of forced my hand a little bit, okay? I didn't actually want to do anything with the woodcock, okay? I didn't want to skin them, frost day or anything like that, you know? I'd have a finished bit of work presented. So I wasn't really anticipating actually skinning the birds, okay? For my sins, and keep it a bit of a secret, is my taxidermy, my bird taxidermy isn't very good at all, actually. I'm more of a mammal guy myself, you know? If you look into my back catalogue, you know, it is largely mammals. The only birds I've done is these unstuffed ones, you know? So I'm not actually very good at bird taxidermy. And it all kind of went a bit wrong, you know? The skin is so papery thin, you know? It makes so many holes in this thing. And I ended up with this, you know? Because I was taking photos along the way. And I was like, oh shit. And then I realised that the trick I missed was this shouldn't have been a series of photographs at all. It should have been a film. I should have filmed myself doing this. Doing this, right? And then once I finished filming it, what I should have done is I should have reversed the film. So what you get is me getting this. Put them together and then put them inside the body and then cut off the and reassembling the bird. Okay? That's really what I should have done. And that sort of reversal and the sort of playing back and the sort of looping of things, I think was me almost trying, okay, let's try, you know, how can we reimagine this alive? I better hurry up a little bit. Okay, so another way of understanding woodcock is to look at its status as a game bird. Okay, it's not actually a wild bird. It's actually a game bird. Yeah, that's totally wrong. It's not actually a game bird. It's actually a wild bird. We'll come to that in a little minute. So I started to like look for woodcock stuff in all sorts of different places. I encouraged my students to really source out lots of different kinds of information. You know, so I've read the Woodcock Watch annual report of 2013, and I've read my son's ladybird book of Woodland Birds of British Isles, and woodcock's in there. You know, so I'm looking all over, and I'm playing this. I'm playing Top Trumps with my son Robin, my snipe gets choked by his woodcock. You know, and everywhere I go, you find something quite interesting about woodcock. Everywhere I started to go, it's like, oh gosh, I'm hearing different voices from different sort of sources, and each of them are saying just slightly different things. My picture gets so much more the more I look in different places. And that includes, like ladybird books to top trumps and whatnot. So what I did is, while my two woodcock are getting x-rayed in Huntley at the vet, I've gone down to Charles Rayburn, a very good butcher there, and I've said, okay, I want a couple of woodcock, okay? And it's a young boy that served me, Gary, okay? And he was like, oh, just a minute. I went on the back, and then comes Charles, okay, the proprietor. He's like, oh, so you want woodcock, do you? And I'm like, yeah, you know. Oh, they're not so easy to come by. I don't have any at the moment. But I could have some on Thursday. There's a shoot going out this week. You know? And I'm like, oh God, no, okay, no, I don't want any woodcock. Don't give me woodcock, you know. Don't want to put an order in, I'm going to shoot some woodcock for me. My you know, no, I've changed my mind. And he's like, no, they're going to be shot anyway. I've got to put an order if I want them to come here, you know. So I say, okay, I'll have them. The thing about the woodcock, right, the lovely thing about the woodcock is you eat it whole. You eat it with its intestines, okay, cooked inside, okay, and it's a really sort of creamy sort of delicacy, okay. The only thing you remove is its gizzard, okay, and the gizzard, another name for a gizzard is the gastric mill, okay, which involves these polished circular stones inside the gastric mill. So that's a whole other sort of like circularity thing going on there as well. So I made an order of two woodcock, and he said to me, how do you want them prepared? Do you want them on the feather, or do you want them prepared in the traditional way? And I said, I want them in the traditional way, please, like this. And this is how it is, okay? So you leave his head on, and you truss up his legs with his beak, like this, sort of skewering thing, you know? And you eat the whole bird whole. You eat the bird whole. It's customary. Once you've eaten the body of the bird, what you do is you crack open its beak, you crack open its skull, and you sort of suck the cranial juices using its beak as a little sort of handle. And that's how you do it. That's pretty good. Fucking nuts. You know? So, this Christmas dinner, you know, this Christmas, my Christmas dinner is going to be woodcock. Okay? My Christmas dinner, my Christmas dinner is going to be woodcock. You know? And so that's sort of, you know, and I would imagine something else is going to come from that. You know, and actually, one other very lovely thing about woodcock, and this kind of, you know, because I don't know what woodcock looks like, the butcher could give me any bird. Okay, give me like, you know, wood pigeon or something, I wouldn't know it. But the thing about woodcock is that it's got two very different colours of meat. You see on its leg, it's got white meat, and you see on its breast, it's got dark meat. That's reverse from all other sort of poultry, you know, chickens and all that. They've all got dark meat on legs, you know. So, and it was very nice to sort of get this from the butcher and to actually see that physical sort of shift, you know. And okay, so this moment in time, I am sort of thinking, okay, I'm going to sort of combine my taxidermy and culinary skills, and I'm going to produce two stuffed birds. Okay, I'm going to use a traditional style of taxidermy. Okay, bind up body or something like that, and make a stuffed woodcock prepared in the traditional way. And I'm going to make another stuffed bird using the taxidermy and have this woodcock, two woodcock prepared in the traditional way is a completely accurate, true statement, you know? And I would love to see this woodcock in the zoology building next to when you were speaking in that corner, you know? Something interesting happening there. Okay, I've still got 8 minutes, it's fine. So the woodcock thing, the game bird, and the culinary aspect, and I have to say something about this sort of shooting sort of thing, because the woodcock reveals this far deeper sort of secret clandestine sort of world, you know? I wasn't at all aware of this before. I've said before, the woodcock is says it's a game bird, but actually it's not. It's actually a wild bird, okay? And that actually adds to something of its sort of mystery and mystique within the sort of shooting sort of right. partly because it's wild and it's not a weird bird. Okay, so the shoot, you know? And it's not that it's illegal to shoot a wild bird, okay? But there's almost an illegality to it, you know? So it's got quite a sort of murky sort of situation there between, you know, do you treat it as if it's a game bird, do you treat it as if it's a wild bird? And that kind of gets sort of mixed over a little bit. Okay, plus, the woodcock's very, very hard to shoot. You know, when you flush them up, they fly in a sort of zigzag sort of pattern and through the trees sort of thing, and very sort of hard to shoot. And that sort of adds, and bearing in mind that they're this sort of really sort of fine delicacy, that sort of adds allure or sort of charm or something. I should also have said, when I was at the butcher's, I said I wanted these two woodcock, I asked him how much they would cost, and he said, I don't know. He said, it depends on how many I shot, you know? And I said, oh, that's really, really interesting as well, you know, that sort of implication there. And so there's this sort of thing. Okay, so now, right, we enter into this sort of inner circle of a sort of shoot fraternity, okay? The Woodcock Club, okay? It's very, very distinguished club to be in, okay? And what happens is, right, if you can shoot two woodcock, right, you get, so you have two barrels, okay? If you can shoot two woodcock with the left and the right barrel of a gun in one sweep, and you get a couple of witnesses watching that you can join the Woodcock Club, okay? And you can get this little lovely narrow badge, okay? Got a small narrow badge that sort of sits on your lapel. It's very, people want that sort of thing, okay? It's a sort of fetishization or a sort of elevation of the bird status again, okay? And look at these three woodcock with the guns and dogs. Okay? And although I can be sort of quite disparaging for all these poor dead birds and these woodcock, I sort of think, you know, they probably know a lot more about woodcock than I could ever know. Okay? And that's, you know, hands up to that, okay? But while I also sort of want to talk a little bit about linguistics here, okay? A little bit of sort of wordplay, okay? Because I've just called them woodcocks, okay? I think these are Springer Spaniels, but Cocker Spaniels, okay? The Cocker from Cocker Spaniels actually comes from to go a-cocking, to go shooting woodcock. Okay, and I thought that's sort of quite an interesting sort of thing. And while we're on the subject of woodcock, okay? You know, I might as well sort of come up to it, okay? Right? The woodcock, okay? The wooden cock. A phallus carved of wood, okay? A dildo, right? And to me, the most famous and important wooden phallus that I can think of is the one that you hear about in the sort of resurrection narrative of Osiris, okay? And what had the Egyptian god Osiris, you know? What happens when Osiris, right? So Set kills Osiris and he cuts his body into 14 pieces. And scatters the 14 pieces of his body all over the world, okay? And his distraught wife Isis and his dark sister Mephibis travel the globe collecting all the parts of his dismembered body back together. But they can't find his cock. okay? I think it's been eaten by a crocodile, I think. They can't find this cock. So what happens is Nephthys, she fashions one out of wood. I think it's like pine wood. But I'm imagining, you know, a taxidermist balsa wood here at the moment, you know? Imagine that taxidermist carving that bit of balsa wood and Nephthys carving this dildo. And then, you know, because she's sort of the dark sister, what she does is she sort of brings Osiris back to life, and therefore Isis then sort of conceives Horus, the bird-headed god. Yeah. So this is really sort of quite important, you know, the sort of symbol of sort of resurrection, and also all this sort of talk of Egypt will become made a bit more clear in just a minute. Okay. Now, last couple of things I need to say about the woodcock just before I finish, okay, is the pin feather, right? This pin feather is a tiny, tiny feather that the woodcock has on each of its wings, okay? And the woodcock's almost like a sort of patron bird of the arts, because this little pin feather is this sort of celebrated brush feather that the artists used to use, sort of thing, you know? And this sort of whole sort of thing. If you go online, you know, you can find any number of portraits of woodcock that have been painted with the pin feather, you know? And they're at once profound and at once completely banal as well, okay? So I started to look at sort of representations of woodcock in art, okay? And we can look to people like Audubon, okay? And a sort of classic wooden aesthetic that Audubon is, sort of thing, you know? We can look at that, and we can sort of really sort of start speaking about the relationship between bird taxidermy and bird illustration and stuff, you know? They really sort of come together like that, you know? And we can also sort of like look at, you know, lovely Monet, okay? Lovely sort of hunting, sort of, you know? And it's really, really beautiful sort of study of the sort of colour and the sort of like feeling of the feather and stuff like that, you know? But there's a bit of artwork, right? There's a bit of artwork with about using a woodcock that I know, okay? And I want to sort of share this with you, right? This piece of work that I made at the turn of the century, 2000, okay? And it was an exhibition I had down at Peacocks called Northern Crypt. And I mummified all these animals, mummified nine, ten animals, I think it was nine animals. And this was a mummified red squirrel. And this is a sort of protected, sort of guardian sort of thing. If we were to travel around the circle, around right here, you would probably find a woodcock, okay? And here it is. Mummified woodcock, ritually mummified on the kitchen table, in King Court, funnily enough. Yeah? And I always sort of thought you had this sort of quite a Buddha-like presence or something like that. I was quite liked about that, right? So I took the opportunity to also get it scanned, okay? X-rayed at the same time. And I, you know, this is like 15 years old or something, you know? This is really 14, 15 years old. And it's just sort of like lovely to sort of see this, you know, this sort of thing going on, and the ages that was in there. Okay? Because it sort of felt as though I'd sort of started to come around full circle a bit. Okay? I've already met the woodcock before. I've encountered it before. You know, and it's sort of like, oh, it's come around again. And to quote the giant from Twin Peaks, It is happening again. Okay, so, you know, I start to look at the woodcock. I start to look back at the woodcock to see what it does and to see what I can do. Okay, and what I did was I started to walk around the trees. Okay, just like the woodcock, I start to walk around the trees. Okay, and then I started to walk around a tree with a shins. Okay? Two different films, okay? I film myself walking forwards, and then film myself walking backwards with the shins. And then what I did is I reversed the film. So this is actually me walking backwards around the tree. This is actually me walking forwards around the tree. And as it's pretty crude. It is a sketch. I would need to do this properly. But as I was doing this, I was getting this weird sort of hypnotic sort of thing happening to me. As I was doing it, I was like, oh my gosh, I already know this. I've seen this before. And I'll show you what it was, right? It was when I was making the Sonic D-Rapper, okay? And I was getting to know all the horned gods, okay? And what the deer do, they do this thing called the roving, where they go around two trees, like this, instead of the eight line, like this, you know? And they're not coming to the woodcock. It's like, oh my gosh, it's clear as day to me, you know? And right, so I'm 2 minutes over my time. Really, to sort of bring this to some sort of conclusion, is there is no conclusion. This is happening right now. It will continue on Christmas Day when I eat the woodcock. Okay? This sharing of this might even, you know, someone might have a thing about a woodcock here that is going to come to me, you know. So here is Skull of Wax. It's a really remarkable bird. Thank you.